So, the second day of the retreat. For those who came to the fireside chat session yesterday, we revealed the word we have for the first day or two called the swamps. So, if you've been experiencing the swamps for the past day or two. Well, what are the swamps? Anyone not know what swamps are? Show of hands. Everybody knows what swamps are. Yeah, okay, so the swamps are when you feel tired and sluggish and the mind's heavy and you're sleepy and sloth and torpor. So that's the swamps for the first day or two. That could happen a lot, so. It's part of the course, and as Gail said yesterday, it's just tiredness. It's just the swamps. It's just the first couple of days of the retreat. So one thing that came up yesterday, also during the fireside chat, even though we didn't have any fire, but anyway. The question came up, why do we practice? Why are we here? Why do we practice? Why are we here? And I thought it might be a good place to start the reflections tonight. Why do we practice? What is the point? Why are we here? Why are we doing this? This retreat, this practice, being in silence, paying attention to our breath, paying attention to our thoughts, to our mind, to our bodies, paying attention, becoming aware. Why do we do this? Actually, I invite you to close your eyes if your eyes are open right now, and just let's do a little reflection. Why are you here? What has brought you here? What was your intention in signing up for the retreat? You might have to go back many months when you first saw the retreat announced and signed up. There might be many reasons. There might be some reasons that came up last week, just before you came. Why am I here? Ask yourself. Why did I bring myself here? Why am I here? And whatever answers came up or didn't, bow to them. And drop the question in again into your heart, into your body, and listen. See what else comes up. Allow yourself to be surprised. Bow to whatever answers came up or didn't come up. And now, for a third time, drop the question into your mind and heart. Why am I here? Why am I really here? What's my highest intention for doing this practice? Drop the question in as if dropping a pebble into a pond. And listen for the ripples. Nothing might come up, something might come up that may surprise you. To open your eyes now. Remember what came up. Remember your intention. As the retreat continues, there may be ups and downs. There may be roller coasters. Coming back to your intention as to why you're here is a source of stability and trust. It can serve as a refuge to remind you why you're here, why you're doing this practice. At times when doubt comes up, I share with you why I do this practice. So many reasons, so many different reasons. One of them is there's this feeling that I, whoever this I is, has been dropped in this body, in this mind, on this planet. Without an instruction manual. And for me, there is a sense of awe of being alive, of being a being that has consciousness, is aware, can sense, can feel. It's amazing. I don't quite understand it. And this Buddhist path that I found, that I've been so lucky to find for me, has been the most thought out, the most well thought out path. For understanding, for making sense, for seeing things more clearly, for feeling my place in this big universe, feeling connected to everything that has come and everything that will ever be, feeling completely connected to everything, feeling that spaciousness. and feeling the impermanence of my existence. Appreciating the fragility of the impermanence of this existence and being okay with it all. Having a sense of a feeling of peace and equanimity. Learning how to do that. How to embody that, which I don't all the time, but that is why I practice. And as little and as much as I can, support others do the same. That's why I'm here. So remember your intention, whatever your intention is, your highest intention. Why are we here? Why do we practice? And sit with it. If nothing comes up, if nothing came up, just sit with it. Allow yourself to just sit with it. Allow yourself to get in touch with it. It's important. So the way, the tools that the tool bag that we have for accomplishing our highest intention in this tradition is this practice. It is the practice of paying attention. It's the practice of mindfulness, which is aided by the practice of concentration, the theme of this retreat, mindfulness and concentration. Not as two separate practices, but they help one another, they feed one another. Concentration supports mindfulness, and mindfulness supports concentration. And there is a myth that I would like to dispel, that some beginning meditators especially have, that the goal, the idea is to have an empty mind or a blank mind. If the goal was to have an empty mind, a blank mind, cows would have been enlightened a long time ago. So, we talk about letting go of thoughts, letting go of stories, and coming back to the breath, coming back to the breath. We do that in order to build the stability to be able to do with be in able to in order to be able to be with everything. Let me repeat that. So the idea of letting go of thoughts, letting go of stories, isn't to just let go of them permanently as if they're dangerous and you should never think and your mind should be blank. That is not the idea. What the idea is we train ourselves, we train our attention to have stability. So if the attention is rocky and your mind is being pulled every which way, especially at the beginning of the retreat, your mind doesn't have the foothold, the stability to pay attention wisely. You're just being dragged each way or another. So especially at the beginning of practice, at the beginning of every sit, at the beginning of a retreat, you especially want to build that stability of the mind and bring the attention back to your anchor, to your breath, to your body, if you're walking, to your feet, to your legs, etc. You want to bring your attention back and let go of what's coming up in order to build the stability of the mind to then open up and be with everything as it arises. Because at that point, the mind can have wisdom, can have stability. And you can see thoughts and stories for what they are without being entangled in them. So there's nothing wrong, inherently wrong, with the stories or with the thoughts, with the emotions. Just that at the beginning of the retreat, especially, and as you're trying to build that stability of mind, that concentration, it serves the mind to come back, to let go, to come back to the anchor, and to let go of thoughts, of stories, etc. But again, inherently there's nothing wrong with them, and the point is not to completely block them out forever, because the practice of mindfulness, the practice of vipassana, is seeing things as they are, seeing everything clearly as they are. And seeing things is you investigate whatever comes up. Sensations in the body, thoughts that are rising and passing away, sounds, everything. Does that make sense? If it doesn't make sense, give me a shake of your head. Okay, I'm not getting any shakes, so maybe we're okay. All right. Okay. So sitting in the midst of it all is where we're headed, is where we're headed. But in order to be there, we build the stability, we build the concentration. And again, they go hand in hand, and you've probably seen that in the past couple of days, the times when your mind has more stability and has more capacity for being with things, and the times when it doesn't have as much stability and is getting caught, is getting entangled. You start seeing that. Alex invoked this beautiful metaphor of the redwoods that we're surrounded by, and I encourage you to walk around and look at them as you practice. This feeling of stability, the roots that go down, that feeling of stability, and branches relaxed, soft, held. The fullness and aliveness of branches and leaves, the fullness and aliveness of the attention. So I encourage you, I invite you, the first few days of the retreat especially, to give more attention to building that stability of your attention, and building that stability while you sit in your sitting by bringing the attention back to the sensations of the breath in the body, the rhythm of the breath, surfing the breath, as Gil was talking about, coming back, and coming back to the whole body also, like the trunk of the tree, of the redwood tree. That's a great place for building stability, mindfulness of the body, sensations of your body, feeling your body. As Gil was talking about this morning, leading us through the meditation, feeling the hands, the right hand, the left hand, the sensations in the body. Feel the sensations in the body. Be rooted in the sensations in the body the first few days. It's very important. You can stabilize your attention in other senses, opening up to sounds. Can stabilize in that sensation. Some of you might find that easier. Experiment with that. Some of you might find it easier to stabilize in the sensations of the body. It's been a big part of my practice, mindfulness of the body. I mentioned to some of you last night that I've had a chronic condition with a lot of pain in the body. And in order to work with that, I've brought my attention back to the body. Instead of running away from it, I've brought the attention back to the body, staying with the sensations, staying with the raw sensations, the unpleasant sensations, staying with them, staying with them, staying with them. And I realized that that has been a very important training for me, the mindfulness of the body, because the attention becomes so solidly based. There's a lot of body, right? There's a lot of sensations, like the trunk of the beautiful redwood tree. Bring the attention back. Bring the attention back to the body, wherever it's easiest for you. Not that I wish chronic pain on any of you, but it's been a huge teacher for me, stabilizing my attention in the body. And as you sit, as you walk, as you eat, as you're walking about, going about your errands, or not, well, there are not no such thing as errands, but sangha service and yogi jobs, and walking around, getting water, going to the bathroom, whatever it is that you do to take care of yourself, bringing attention to the movement of the body, bringing attention to the body. I can't repeat it enough. The first few days of the retreat, bring the attention back. Bringing the attention back to the body, bring it back to the breath, to the body. And when we say breath, again, body is a shorthand for the breath also, because we're feeling the breath sensations within the body. So when I say the body, that also is a shorthand for the breath within the body. When you walk, bring the attention to your feet, to your legs. So if there is one thing that you remember, especially if you're relatively new to the practice, bringing the attention back to the body, to the breath, to the sensations. And that gives rise to stability of mind, gives rise to concentration. Because you need to have some stability of mind, you need to have some concentration in order to be able to see things clearly, to be unentangled from the stories of the mind, to see more clearly how are you relating to your life, how are you relating to your stories. So bringing the attention back . Gail talked about two of the factors of concentration, or two of the jhanic factors, they're also called, and I will talk a little more about them, vitakka and vichara, that have a lot to do with this, with also this idea of stabilizing the attention, stabilizing the attention. So the Pali words vitakka and vichara, vitakka, V-I-T-A-K-K-A, and vichara, V-I-C-A-R-A, So vitakka is translated as application of the mind, applying the attention, the application, initial application, or placing contact, connecting, touching, or directing. Basically, it's bringing the attention to an object, directing, touching, making contact. And the how is gentle. The how is very gentle, just as Gil was talking about and quoting Father Keating, bringing back the attention gently, very gently. So it's interesting because as you pay attention to your attention making contact with an object of attention, with an object, and what I mean by object is an object of the mind. So breath is an object, the sensations of the breath is an object. Sensation in your body is an object of attention. So when your mind makes contact, touches, there is, if you notice, there is a delight, there's a little bit of delight in making it, in connecting with, as opposed to the mind not having a place to land or landing at all or being completely confused and distracted. Investigate in your attention, in your practice. Don't take my word for it. See if there's just a little bit of, there's just when that contact happens, when you bring your attention and touch the breath, there's it's nice to land. It's nice for it to touch into that object of your attention, your breath, sensations, maybe a sound. Maybe the mind makes contact with a sound. Maybe your mind right now makes contact with the sound of my voice right now. It's just that contact. Notice that, that point of contact, when the attention touches what it's paying attention to. That's vitakka, right there. Not very complicated. Okay? And gentleness is so important. The how is so important. We don't want to latch on and bring back to attention. We don't want to latch on like a guard dog. It can become very painful. But we want to touch lightly as if we're caressing a butterfly. Otherwise it will break. Gail last night talked about the metaphor of a feather on a cotton ball, that level of gentleness. So I invite you right now, actually, again, this is the interactive part of the talk. I'm going to ask you to close your eyes for a moment. And notice the vitakka, the application, the touching, the connecting of your attention with whatever you choose. Could be with your breath, could be with a sensation in the body, could be with the sound of my voice. Notice that attention touching the sound or the breath sensation or the body sensation. Just notice that touching. And notice how it can be done very gently. That landing can be a very soft, gentle landing, gentle touching. And I invite you to come up with your own metaphor right now. What works well for you? I'll offer a few. Try it on for size. F- feather on a cotton ball. See if that works for you. See if that works, if you try it on physically. Like, what does that feel? What's the feeling of a feather on a cotton ball? Does that feel right for me? Maybe the metaphor of gently touching, making contact with the face of a newborn. See if that works for you. Just gently touching his or her cheek. Gently touching their cheek. The gentleness. Now you get to be creative. Use your own body memory. Something that signifies, perhaps from your life, from your past, from your life, epitomizes touching something very gently, just touching very gently, physically. See what comes up for you. If nothing comes up, that's fine too. Can also see if the idea, in addition to what you're working with, the idea of foreground, background, not so much, as Gail said, you're not bringing, say, your attention back, but you're bringing what's already there, say, the breath to the foreground. The breath is always there. You just bring it to the foreground and then touching with your attention. So I invite you to open your eyes. So the light touch is very important. And I discovered this, I think my second or third retreat. So I didn't quite even know at that point the concept of vitaka. But I remember on some early retreat, I decided, okay, I'm tired of all these thoughts that escape, and you know, I realize I've been in a thought train minutes later. So what I'm going to do, I'm going to be very, very vigilant. I'm going to pounce. Every thought that comes up, I'm going to notice it right away. I'm going to notice every thought that comes up. And after a while, I was really successful. The thoughts that came up, I got the thought. I noticed the thought. I noticed the thought. I really noticed it. What I wasn't noticing was the kind of energy. It was the pouncing energy. It was the pouncing school, as Gail was talking about last night. And I didn't notice it actually through the first sit, second sit, third sit. I was just really happy. Wow, I'm doing this great. I'm noticing every single thought. Woohoo, I'm doing great. Until my mind felt withered. I was tired. I didn't want to practice anymore. It felt too hard. It wasn't fun anymore. And I was really surprised because here I was completely successful in my mission. I was catching every thought before it got out of hand. I was there. I was right there. And then as I checked in to feel how I felt like a hurt child. My mind felt like a hurt child. It just wasn't fun. It just was too hard. It was too much, too tight. And the metaphor that came up for me was, I wasn't catching butterflies, because I think that had been my original intention. Like, catch these butterflies of thoughts as they go flying. I was pouncing. I was squelching these butterflies, and it became very painful. And it might be okay for a minute or 2 minutes if you have the wrong level of energy, that too much energy. But after a few hours or days, the mind, you notice in the mind, it builds up. You can't escape it. So I learned a lot. I learned a lot from that. So I don't regret it, because my mind had to go, the pendulum had to go far to too much effort and too tight effort and not gentle vitaka, until I learned, oh, that was too much. Okay, I need to be gentle. And that might happen for you. And it's okay. The pendulum might swing one way or another, but learn from my mistake. And if you can avoid it and have that gentle light touch when you're bringing the attention back for vitaka, you can save yourself some time and some hurt. So vitaka usually is paired with, vitaka is paired with vichara. So vichara is the sustaining, lingering, massaging, caressing. It's basically the follow through. So with vitaka, we touch, we make contact with the object. With vichara, we stay, we help it stay, like, okay, stay now. When, I guess the words that I like is touch, because touch is gentle, and then caress, you stay. Another metaphor from the suttas is as if you're, if you had a bowl and you would hold the bowl, you would grab the bowl and then you would touch the bowl and then you polish it. So that polishing the bowl is the vichara, that you keep the attention there. And I think it was on the same retreat when, at a different time, other sits, I noticed I had all this energy. I was bringing my mind back. But there was no sustaining, there was no application. So I would bring the mind back, but then I've succeeded, I brought the mind back, whew, and then the mind would just fly off. There was no application, there was no sustaining. It was so interesting to see the difference between vitaka and vichara. They really are different. See that in your practice. You bring the mind back, and then you let it stay. Okay, now stay. Stay, okay, let's stay. And what's really important is, again, in terms of energy, if vitaka was like this, you know, all the energy would be here and then you would bounce off and go away. Ooh, ouch, that would hurt, right? But if you would bring vitaka, touch the object with your attention, and then stay gently, have this gentle pressure. Pressure perhaps is not a good word, but just that gentle caressing. The impact comes from over time. This and this have the same amount of energy force on this hand, but this is distributed over time. You see what I mean? If you summed up all the energy, every second of energy that's applied, it would be perhaps even more than this. So the impact of building your attention, the impact comes not from the force of the energy, but the fact that you bring it and you stick it there. So it's gentle, but it's persistence. So it's that persistence, it's that staying that really, really builds up the momentum in your attention. An experiment. Your mind is your instrument. Learn how to play it. Learn how it plays. It's fascinating to actually see all these differences, and then you'll know how to apply your attention, not just on the cushion, but out in the world. What is that application of the mind and that sustaining? This can be so instructive in so many ways. So another topic that I wanted to touch on, and may not be a thorough touching on, actually won't be, but we'll see how much time we have to touch that, is the topic of the hindrances, the five hindrances. So they're typically called hindrances, and I don't really like the word hindrances because they sound bad, they sound terrible, like, oh, they're hindrances. Whereas they can actually be, if you work with them wisely, if you make them an object of your meditation, they can lead to wisdom. So they're not all that bad. So I'll tell you what the list is, the list of five. So the list of the traditional list of five is sensual desire, or more generally wanting. The second is ill will, or more generally pushing away, not wanting. The third is sloth and torpor, which you might have experienced the past couple of days in the swamps. The fourth is less restlessness and remorse, or restlessness and worry, it's translated as. And the last one is skeptical doubt. So Gill likened them to the fire hydrants. Actually work with them and polish them, they do lead to wisdom. You learn a lot about your mind, about your habit patterns, about your life, about how your mind works, by getting to know them, by getting to really recognize these habit patterns when they come up in your mind. So, sensual desire or wanting is when, for example, you're sitting on the cushion, say you have a sit, and you really, really want to be somewhere else, for example, or you really want something. There's this strong sensual desire for something else, for just desire for something, and then it's so strong that it takes over the mind. It completely takes over the mind, and the mind is in this in the midst of this wanting. So actually I'll talk about each of them very briefly, and then in general I talk about how to work with them, and some of them have special ways of working with. And ill will is maybe anger comes up all of a sudden, an angry story, or you're just angry at someone who cut you off in the front of the lunch line, or took too much of something, or took the last cookie, as Gail was talking about, or just anger comes up, ill will. Pushing away, not wanting. It can show up in so many different ways. For example, being, again, sitting and then maybe pain comes up and really, really having a very aversive relationship with the pain, wanting to go away, make it go away, make it go away, make it stop. Why am I here? What am I doing here? Why is the bell not ringing? It just, the mind can completely lose its balance sometimes, and you can actually have what's called a multiple hindrance attack, with multiple hindrances coming up, because say the aversion can come up, and then doubt can come up. I don't know how to do this, or what am I doing here? And the more aversion towards people around you, and aversion towards everything. It's just, you know, you can have multiple hindrances of attacks also. Sloth and torpor is the heaviness of the mind and the body, and it's when the energy of the mind, lots of reasons for sloth and torpor. Some of it could just be sleep debt, but some of it could be when the energy of practice is not energized with clarity and investigation, and there's too many calming factors in the mind, so the mind gets dull, the mind gets heavy. And then skeptical doubt, there's so many different varieties of doubt. Usually it shows up as I don't know what I'm doing. I'm not doing this right. I don't know what I'm doing. This is wrong. Am I doing this right? Do the teachers know what they're talking about? Is this right for me? Just doubt, doubt, doubt. So one of the first things to do is to just recognize them, just to recognize when one of these hindrances are happening, instead of identifying with them, instead of becoming it, just recognize, oh, it's doubt. Oh, doubt is coming up. It's just doubt. It's doubt. Doubt is like this. Doubt is like this. And sometimes, simply by recognizing them, they soften. So the middle path for working with hindrances is not to indulge in them, and also not to suppress them, but to really, really get to know them powerfully. It can be very powerful just to recognize what is happening and investigating, being curious about it. So I usually, as I'm preparing a talk, I usually check Wikipedia just to see what it has to say on the topic. And here's a paragraph that I found that I wanted to share with you. I think this is interesting. A couple of paragraphs. Contemporary insight meditation teacher Gil Fronsdal describes the hindrances as a very important list of mental states that have a big impact on meditation practice and people's daily lives. Fronsdal, it's misspelled Gil. We have to fix it. Has an E, shouldn't have an E at the end. Anyway, Fronsdal emphasizes that it is important not to see the hindrances as personal failings. All human beings have them. A big part of mindfulness meditation is to learn about these hindrances in order to become free of them. Therefore, Fronsdal states, the goal is not to dismiss them, but to study them and understand them really well. Fronsdal emphasizes that to be a good student of the hindrances, you must be very patient with them and not be dismissive of them. When they arise, you must stop for them. Fronsdal states that a bumper sticker for this type of training could be, I stop for the hindrances. I love that. Apparently so. Wikipedia says. So you must have said it so. It must be true. If it's in the wiki, if it's on the web, it must be true. You don't indulge in them, Fronsdal states. You become interested and study them. Bhikkhu Anālayo also, in his book Satipatthana, also talks about how the ingenious way of turning these obstacles, so-called obstacles, to meditation objects is what leads to insight. So So in the remaining time, I want to say a little more about each of them. So for sensual desire and wanting, by simply seeing that that's what it is, it's an energy in the mind, and seeing the relationship of the mind to that wanting, oh, it's wanting, it's wanting, it's desires, desire like this. What does it feel like? What does it feel like in the mind? What does it feel like in the body? To really get to investigate and recognize it as a scientist. What does it feel like instead of being caught in it? I want, I want, I want, I want, I want now. That's a very different stance than, oh, this is interesting. How does this show up in this body, in this mind? How does my body feel when it really wants something? Oh, is there tightness? Ooh, look at my belly. Ooh, it's tight. Oh, look at my forehead. Oh, that's interesting. Ah, oh, that's familiar. Wow, how did that come up? Oh, that came up after I felt a little sad. Oh, then I had this desire for ice cream. Oh, isn't that interesting? You can learn so much about yourself, about the patterns of your mind, instead of just trying to get away from it. Oh, I'm wanting, I'm having an ice cream craving in the middle of, oh, bad, bad me, go away. No, that doesn't serve you. Understand it, get to know it. Get to know how it comes up. What does it feel like? In the case of aversion, again, it's really the opposite side of wanting. That's the same way. Get to know it. Ooh, this is what it feels like not to want. Oh, I'm really hating this pain. Wow. Oh, that's a strong energy. Whew, that feels tight in my chest. Wow. Just get to know it. Oh, what does that feel like? What happens in my mind? How does that come up? If the aversion comes up in the form of hatred or anger, also there are some antidotes that you can work with in addition to getting to know it. And those are loving kindness, wishing well, both for yourself, because ill will really hurts when you're angry, when you're upset. It really hurts, both loving kindness for yourself and also for the person that you're upset with, you're angry with, you have ill will towards. Think about their positive qualities. I've done this before. This is great practice. The last place your mind wants to go is to think of their positive qualities. You really don't want to go there. No, they're all bad. I'm angry at them. It's like, okay, just chill. Okay, think of one positive quality. Okay, well, actually, they're on time. You know, just think about positive qualities. You know, okay, when they say something, they're a man of their word. Okay. So think of their positive qualities. And it's so interesting how the mind softens, how the mind doesn't see them, that the person you're upset or angry with, in that all that negative light. It becomes more balanced. Okay, these are the ways in which they might have hurt me. And actually, they're not a totally awful, terrible person. They're these ways in which, you know, they're a decent human being, just like me. So it gets you in touch with the common humanity, that non-separation. So sloth and torpor, could have a lot of causes. Sometimes what could be under it, besides the ones I mentioned, could be if the mind doesn't want to investigate, if the mind doesn't want to go somewhere, if the mind wants to kind of pull the cover on something, it's like, oh, I'm going to get bored. Okay, now I'm going to get tired. I'm going to get sleepy. So So it's usually interesting also, again, to see if there is something that happened, if there's something in the mind that happened just before Sloth and Torpor came up. There may not be anything, but it could be interesting to see the patterns. It could be masking something else. Or again, it could just be fatigue. Or it could be boredom. Sometimes it's boredom. See if it's the boredom that happens before that. And what happened before boredom? So one of the antidotes for Sloth and Torpor is, you wouldn't guess it, vitaka and vichara. You bring energy to the mind. You bring energy. You bring the mind to the object more clearly, with a lot more clarity, and that brings more energy to the mind. And it brightens up the mind with more energy. And of course, another couple of classical ways is open your eyes. If you feel you're feeling sleepy, you can open your eyes. If you've already done the investigation, you can open your eyes. You can do standing meditation. It can be very supportive. Feel free to stand in this room anytime. I especially invite people in the first row to stand, because they give everybody else permission to stand, especially the sits after lunch. And what I've also found really interesting in my practice is to be cognizant, to be aware, and really look at Sloth and Torpor. When the mind gets heavy and foggy, what happens? The mind can actually be awake during that hypnagogic state and see these dreamy states come up, and notice when you're about to fall asleep, and are you going to fall asleep on the in-breath or the out-breath? There's so many investigations you can do. It's very interesting. You learn so much about your mind. Restlessness and worry. Again, see what's under it. Investigate. First of all, name it. Oh, it's just restlessness. It's just worry. See it as a passing show, as passing cloud patterns, as passing weather that comes and goes. And a couple of antidotes for this specifically. One is mindfulness of breathing to bring more calm and stability. Another one actually is to give your mind a bigger pasture, because sometimes restlessness, the mind, if you cage it up, then it feels really anxious. So just give it a wide pasture. Maybe do mindfulness of hearing. Just feel the spaciousness. Allow your mind to roam a little bit with sounds, hearing. And the last one, doubt. Naming this one, this can be a huge shift. In the past, when I've had doubt, and in daily life, just calling, oh, it's doubt. Oh, it's just doubt. It's just doubt. Doubt sometimes is the hardest one to see, because by its nature, you're already doubting, right? But when you name it, when you say, oh, it's just doubt, you put a label on it. And also, one way to work with doubt is kind of take the wind out of its sail. Instead of believing the doubt and being within and doubting what's happening, is to actually use it as wise investigation. Not so much as deflated, like, oh, I don't know. I was like, well, actually, let me investigate what is here to investigate this topic of doubt. What? So it's kind of doing a little bit of an Aikido move. And try this on for size. This may not make sense what I'm saying, but try it on physically and see what that might feel like. After you name it, try that Aikido move and actually use the energy of doubt as wise investigation on what is happening. So, hindrances are not really hindrances. We can learn so much through them. Let's just sit for a moment. May you work with whatever arises in your practice, like polishing the fire hydrant. Thank you for your attention. Oh yes, so we'll have another QA session tonight, and Gail and Alex will do the QA.
We don't know yet.
Okay, we don't know yet. I was going to nominate them, but and that will happen during the at the very end of the 7:45 sit. So if you would please leave questions on the board by 7 o'clock, that'd be great. Is that okay? 7 o'clock? Thank you.